Radio.com, lots more news and news for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people, the women of Canada, the United States of America, the women of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, of course, all of you will be listening this morning in the European heartland. I don't know where to start, but talk about blame. Victoria, British Columbia faces a problem, but many cities do, and my Globe and Mail today informs me that it's becoming increasingly evident that the British Columbia government is not going to be able to wait until September to start addressing the homeless problem in Kenmore that has sprung up on the grounds of the provincial courthouse in downtown Victoria. It would seem only a matter of time now, says columnist George Mason, see only a matter of time before grievous harm comes to someone living there. Police say the site has been invaded by street gangs, bringing with them threats of intimidation and violence. Now, what is the threat of intimidation? I thought that's what intimidation was, but okay. Drug trafficking, and now use appear regularly in the open. People have been seen shooting up. There have been drug overdoses as well. They're known to be weapons of the capital. Why not? it always amazes me. People are homeless, but they still have enough money for drugs. It's a strange old world. The province's youth advocate, Marielle Turpel-Lafond, recently urged the province to remove vulnerable teens who've been tied to the grounds. Unless they don't have parents, how can you remove them? She says the situation poses a significant public safety risk. Like many, she expressed bewilderment that the province has answered a serious issues related to the tent city was to install showers and toilets, making it more viable a long-term proposition than before. Part of the problem is our idiot courts. Last month, the British Columbia Superior Court judge rejected a bid by the province to get a temporary injunction removing the campers until the matter is addressed in court in September. In reasons for his judgment, Justice Christopher Hinkson expressed sympathy toward the argument, saying that it simply had nowhere to go. He felt not enough had been done to build sufficient shelter spaces to accommodate all those unfortunate souls looking for a roof over their heads. Maybe they shouldn't all be encamped in one place. There's a case of an idiot judge. And then also, this is being put off for a further hearing in September. Well, what's it now? It's the middle of May. The summer months, of course, are the most clement of the year, most likely to draw even more people there, especially now that the provincial government has kindly installed toilets and shower facilities. Yeah, it almost is paying to look a little like permanent. Yeah, you know, there's this haplessness. Why must the court, for instance, if there must be a court case, why must it be put off until September? Well, why can't there be an emergency court hearing? Well, there just it doesn't seem to be the ability to deal with things. Victoria Chief of Police Del Manick told a special meeting of the city council last week that the situation of the camp is deteriorating, becoming unsafe, not just for residents, but for social service providers who are visiting regularly to check up on those living there. So social workers are all being intimidated. It's weird. Break the camp up. He said residents in the area already irate. The camp is being allowed to not only exist but proliferate in size, are increasingly on edge over the criminal element now ensconced in the neighborhood. The police are seeking more funding so police officers can attend the site on a more regular basis. That comment, I think, is so utterly hypocritical and dysfunctional. See, it's the police department, rather than saying, well, we'll get on top of it because we're the police. We're the ones paid to protect public safety. He said, we need more money. It's a budget grab. I'll give the good chief a clue. Why not take some of the officers you've got out there revenueing, and by that I mean writing speeding tickets, traffic tickets, get them out of harassing motorists and get them into patrolling the camp. And you can do it without a budget increase. Then you might be able to turn to the city and say, look, and what we did to help manage this camp, maybe we deserve a slight increase for next year. It would seem the province may soon actually go back for it, seek an injunction again. If it doesn't already, it will soon have grounds to seek a temporary injunction on the basis that the conditions at the camp have changed drastically since Justice Hinkson last reviewed the matter. The fact that the police are acknowledging that gangs have moved in and people are shooting up drugs in plain view of passersby should be enough to, on its own, for the courts to accept another injunction application. Well, the courts are so politically correct, social workery, and out of control. Who knows what they'll do? What I don't understand is if they know they're in there shooting up drugs, the criminal gangs are in there, why aren't the police in there? Good question, isn't it? Unlike some crime situations where the police may not know where these people are, here they do know where they are. Well, why aren't they there? This is a characteristic of an inept society, of a failed order that just can't get it together. Well, my The local paper, or at least my national paper, the Globe and Mail, informs me that our Prime Minister, our former Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, who was Prime Minister from 2006 to his defeat in the election last October, October 19th, 2015, is likely going to resign his seat. He didn't lose his seat, he simply didn't, his party didn't win. The Liberals under Justin Trudeau, the trust fund kid, won, and so the trust fund kid is now Prime Minister. Harper's been very quiet. He's not taken part in the opposition, at least not spoken in House of Commons. We're told, though, that he is has several possibilities in the private sector. I'm not surprised, but cushy boards and board of directors jobs. It also sounds as though he would like to set up some sort of a think tank or foundation looking at global or international affairs, things like free trade and the like. And the article refers to the fact that he's been a lifelong supporter of Israel. And his executive assistant, Rachel Curran, says that's what we call his principal foreign policy. It recognizes that we have to stay engaged with actors who don't behave very well because of their importance and size. Well, actually, he didn't remain engaged with Iran. He broke diplomatic relations with Iran. But it doesn't mean we don't speak out about these issues. Okay, so we'll just have to see where that goes. However, the big point, the point she also stressed was his longtime support for Israel. Now, I found that the comments near the end of the article very interesting. Mr. Harper seems to have no plans to leave Calgary. He recently attended an event at the Las Vegas home of casino owner Sheldon Adelson, who was hosting a meeting of the Republican Jewish Coalition. Mr. Harper's office said he attended exclusively as an expression of his continuing support for Israel. As Paul Harvin used to say in his radio broadcasts, well, here's the rest of the story. Well, let me suggest, here's more of a story. I don't know if this is the rest of it. Everybody should know who Sheldon Adelson is. He's a billionaire, ultra-Zionist, who is giving away a great deal of money in American politics, particularly to Republicans, and he has certain conditions. He will fund you if you pledge 110% support for Israel. So in other words, that you become an agent of a foreign state. And one that's not always friendly to the interests of the United States. Secondly, that you support open-door immigration. And thirdly, that you're against unions. Now, those are his conditions in the States. Adelson has swirled around tens of millions of dollars and bought himself a lot of influence. He is a particularly pernicious individual. Now, Stephen Harper, who's not an American politician, he's Canadian, went to the home of Mr. Adelson. Now, that would suggest a pretty significant degree of familiarity, let's say. Adelson was hosting a meeting of the Republican Jewish Coalition. That is, organized Jews within the Republican Party to influence, to uncritically support the state of Israel and influence American politicians to do likewise. Harper said that he attended exclusively as an expression of his continuing support for Israel. You think so? I mean, well, why would you go to Adelson's house to indicate support for Israel? Everybody knows he supports Israel. That's not a mystery here. I'll tell you why. I suspect he's looking for serious funding from Mr. Adelson. And yes, I'm sure Adelson can part with a few million dollars to help set up Mr. Harper's little institute. And, of course,
not that I think Harper would have to be bribed to do it. I think Mr. Adelson can count on another neocon, pro-Israel, voice, and, you know, if we don't get into other matters such as immigration, Harper did nothing, absolutely nothing, to halt the third world invasion of Canada. In fact, he upped the numbers. Even in 2008 and 2009, when we were in the depths of the biggest economic downturn since the Great Depression, when our very economic system was in peril, when unemployment was over 10%, he boasts that we kept those immigration numbers up. In other words, put it a different way. While over 1 in 10 Canadians was out of work, the Harper government brought in more competition for the non-existent jobs. An absolute boot in the testicles and a slap in the face to the unemployed. That's what it was. And that's the neocon agenda all the way. The long-range replacement of the European founding settler people of North America and, of course, the Europeans in Europe. Our replacement on the installment plan. Or white genocide, white. Harper's all for that. So is Sheldon Adelson. Now, exactly what direction the not yet formed institute that Stephen Harper is leading politics to head will take, we don't know. But with potential backers like Sheldon Adelson, it will certainly not be in the interests of the European founding settler people of this country. Well, here are a couple of items about Islam. Muslims' sexual rights in terms of non-Muslim women. In word and deed, in Islamic and non-Islamic states, Muslim men appear to think that non-Islamic women, impure infidels, exist solely to satisfy, rather gratify their sexual urges. And that's true. The mass rape of German women in Cologne and on the German seas, it turned out it was not just Cologne, it occurred in Salzburg in Austria, in Vienna in Austria, in Hamburg, Germany, in Sweden, and other places, stems from religious beliefs. It's not just these were a few couple of bad actors. Yes, of course, every religion has, every people have some bad actors. But this is more fundamental, and of course, raises the question of why must we bring in diversity? Maybe some diverse groups don't quite fit with us. Anyway, the article continues. First, consider the beliefs and actions of those committed to waging jihad in the name of Allah, outfits such as the Islamic State. In the moments before he raped the 12-year-old non-Muslim girl, the Islamic State fighter took the time to explain that what he was about to do was not sin. Because the preteen girl practiced her religion other than Islam, the Quran not only gave him the right to rape her, it condoned and encouraged it, he insisted. He bound her hands and gagged her. Then he knelt over the bed and prostrated himself in prayer before getting on top of her. When it was over, he knelt to pray again. A bookending rape with acts of religious devotion. I kept telling him it hurts. Please stop. The little girl said, whose body is so small that an adult could encircle her waist with two hands. So, you know, you tell me, a girl, but that's that little. If you could get your hands around her waist, all the rape, of course, is terrible. But this is particularly heinous. He told me, says the little girl, that according to Islam, he's allowed to rape a non-believer. He said that by raping me, he's drawing closer to Allah. Yet such behavior is not limited to fanatical jihadists, who have nothing whatsoever to do with Islam, as most of the fools and liars will assure us. Rather, it permeates the totality of Islamic culture. And that's interesting. Now, we were always told, well, the ISIS and Al-Qaeda are not really Muslim. Well, where are the Muslim leaders who denounce them? And they commit their atrocities in the name of Islam. They're not thieves and robbers and murderers who happen to practice Islam. They do what they do in the name of Islam, and there's a big difference. Al Capone was a murderer, a gangster, an extortionist, a whoremonger, a bootlegger, and probably lots of other crimes like that I've overlooked. And he was nominally a Roman Catholic. That is, he was born a Roman Catholic and baptized. But he didn't commit those crimes in the name of the Catholic Church. He didn't say, I'm running bootlegging because I'm a Catholic. I'm ordering people killed because I'm a Catholic. He didn't, and that's the big difference. Consider recent events in Pakistan. Three Christian girls walking home after a hard day's work were accosted by four rich and drunk Muslim men, hardly ISIS candidates, in the car. They misbehaved. They yelled suggestive and lewd comments and harassed the girls to get in their car for a ride and some fun. When the girls declined the invitation, adding that they were devout Christians and did not practice sex outside of marriage, the men became enraged and chased the girls, yelling, how dare you run away from us? Christian girls are only for one thing, the pleasure of Muslim men. They drove their car into the three girls, killing one and severely injuring the other two. Or consider the words of human rights activists speaking about another Muslim man's rape of a 9-year-old Christian girl. Such incidents occur frequently. Christian girls are considered goods to be damaged at leisure. Abusing them is a right. According to the community's mentality, it is not even a crime. Muslims consider Christian girls as spoils of war. And indeed, Muslims... both the Barbary pirates on the west end of the Mediterranean and the Ottoman Turks on the east end for centuries raided ships and when they found Christian women aboard raped forced them into prostitution and was almost always involved rape. Let's relegate to third world countries like Pakistan and ISIS-controlled areas, the subhuman treatment and sexual abuse of infidel women, that's non-Muslim, is becoming a common fixture in the West. Thus, recently in Germany, a group of Muslim so-called refugees stalked a 25-year-old woman at night, hurled filthy insults and taunted her for sex. One told her that German women were there for sex. Before reaching into her blouse and trousers and groping her. These recent stories from Germany and Pakistan are identical. Muslim men harassing non-Muslim women on the assumption that it's their Islamic right and privilege, except for one difference. The German infidel escaped with her life, whereas the Pakistani infidel, that is Christian woman, was murdered for refusing to gratify the sexual desires of her Islamic accosters. As Islam's presence continues to grow in Europe, the difference will quickly fade. Already there are other, more subtle similarities between third world Pakistan and so-called first world Germany. In a report about the manslaughter of the three Christian girls in Pakistan, we find that other girls in the area are now too scared to travel at night and are being accompanied by by men and their families. In Germany, the latest reports from Dortmund, where German women are there for sex anecdote transpired, paint a terrifying picture of a city where it is now unsafe for women to go out at night for fear of being attacked and raped by refugees in their own country. Unbelievable! And this is the unassimilable garbage that Angela Merkel brought in last year. She is a traitor. And I don't toss that word around lightly. But there is no other word for what she has done. Indeed, less than a month earlier on New Year's Eve, 1,000 Muslim migrants, also apparently thinking that non-Muslim women exist for one thing, went on a raping spree in Cologne and elsewhere, leaving hundreds of infidel women violated, beaten, mauled, and traumatized. The same way infidel women living in Muslim-majority countries often feel. Of course, well before the so-called migrant crisis, Europe had and ignored ample lessons concerning what happens when Muslim populations continue to grow. In Britain alone, where a large Muslim minority has long existed, countless British girls in various regions have been sexually abused and gang raped by Muslims who apparently deemed it their Islamic right. Said one rape victim, the men who did this to me have no remorse. They would tell me that what they were doing was okay in their culture. Days ago, a judge told 12 Muslim men that they took such terrible and heartless sexual advantage of a 13-year-old British girl before sentencing them. Yes, but why are they there in Western countries? And of course, you see through these incidents the absolute falseness and the lies of the religion of multiculturalism and diversity, you know, multiculturalism with its nonsensical belief that all cultures are equal. All cultures are not equal. That is essentially the same. They're not. Not you have a culture that, like Islam, that believes that non-Islamic women are essentially damaged or whores, and therefore the sexual gratification of Muslim men. You can't mix the two cultures together. A Muslim man in Britain confessed that Muslim men are taught that men, quote, are second-class citizens, little more than chattels or possessions over whom they have absolute authority. And that means imams preach a doctrine that denigrates all women but treats whites, meaning non-Muslims, and with particular contempt. Another Muslim convicted of rape in a separate case told the British court that sharing non-Muslim girls for sex was part of Somali culture and a religious requirement. See, the problem with bringing in radically different cultures. It's not just a matter of superficial things like food, you know, like what type of starch, what way you'll eat your starch. You know, some will eat rice, some will eat potatoes, some will eat noodles. Those are superficial differences. There are much deeper cultural differences. And there it is. Whether seen by pious Muslims as a religious requirement, as cited by an ISIS rapist to his 12-year-old victim, or whether seen as part of Pakistani or Somali culture, that is Islamic culture. The subhuman treatment and sexual degradation of non-Muslim women and children by Muslims who deem it their right is apparently another exoticism the West must embrace as if it wishes to keep worshipping at the altar of multiculturalism. And there's a kind of a further story to this. An Algerian man who almost killed his 25-year-old student victim shouted out, if Allah wills it, in Arabic, as he raped her in a darkened alley, a court has heard. The man, identified only by his first name, Reda, is accused of following the student as she walked home from a nightclub at 5 a.m. in Hanover, Germany. Afterwards, with his victim badly beaten, he's alleged to have climbed off her and asked her if she enjoyed it. The ultimate sick insult. While we are still on Islam and violence, and let's be quite clear, there is a fundamental challenge to Christianity here. Islam is, as is Judaism, is hostile to Christians, perhaps for slightly different reasons. Muslim man takes 2-year-old Christian boy and shoots him in the head. A Muslim man in Pakistan attacked a 2-year-old Christian boy and shot him in the head. He was shot and killed by a wealthy Muslim landowner in Nazimabad in Pakistan. He was angry at his father for refusing to work at his home without pay. Fides news agency recently reported that the alleged murderer, Haji Rashid, refused to pay Christian worker Samsun Masi the amount he owed him for painting his house. A dispute then arose in which Masi said he would no longer work in Rashid's house. Enraged, the landowner and his son,
Bosrat then allegedly broke into the Christian man's house and started shooting indiscriminately. While Masi and his father were only injured, a bullet struck his two-year-old son, Ayan, killing him instantly. And the news story has a picture of the poor little kid's face just blowing in. The most horrific persecution of Christians is happening right now. Christians are being killed and tortured in the most demonic and cruel ways one can imagine. And it's happening in Mexico. Hundreds of thousands of people are slaughtered, countless innocents forced under the yoke of the most horrific and sinister tyranny. But there's hope, for tens of thousands of Christians are raising arms and fighting back. This preacher talks about a documentary he did. These are the type of stories that really ought to be featured a lot more. And I say featured, but not just in the religious press, although most religious papers I know go very, very lightly on this. I'll tell you why. Because many Christian leaders buy into the nonsense of multiculturalism. And much throat clearing, these are kind of uncomfortable facts. Maybe the much-loved other, the ones that the idiot Pope is embracing, Islam, maybe they're not just different, and they certainly are, but they are fundamentally hostile. And, you know, the slightest glance at the history of the last 1,200 years showed there has been an ongoing conflict between Christianity and Islam, and there have been repeated attempts to invade Europe by Islam. That's the history. Now, I'm all for peace, and I'm all for saying, well let's historical wrongs and conflicts be put in the past. Yes, I can go along with that, but let's not permit or facilitate a repeat of the invasion of Europe. And that's what's happening with mass immigration, where there is mass immigration from Islamic countries by people, perhaps not each and every single one, but many of whom are so poisoned by their, well, bizarre ideas that they simply will not be able to fit in as anything other than conquerors. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. For the last number of weeks, I've been paying tribute to a great musician, Merle Haggard. Merle Haggard, a great country and western songwriter, guitarist, singer, performer, and in many ways, voice of the working man, a patriotic, populist a voice in so many of his records. And I, of course, have adopted Merle Haggard's, one of his best-known songs, The Fighting Side of Me, is the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. Of course, is also my signature tune. Here's another song by Merle Haggard. Listen carefully to the lyrics. It's not just the slogan, America First. That's a good slogan. I agree with it. But there's more to it. Listen to the arguments he makes in this song about putting America first. And this is Merle Haggard. And
valley, who's in charge of it all? God bless the army, and God bless our liberty. That comes the rest of it all. Yeah, I'm in a position of backing away. Freedom is stuck in reverse. Let's get out of Iraq, get back on track, and let's rebuild America first. We're the ones who need it the most. You think I'm blowing smoke? Boys, it ain't no joke. I make 20 trips a year from coast to coast.
That's Merle Haggard, and that's America First. I'm playing on a tune that I hope you'll like. This is Gretchen Wilson with Merle Haggard, and it's called Politically Uncorrect. He does a cameo appearance here. And, Gretchen Wilson herself is a kind of an outspoken singer, representing a lot of good down-home values. She's first hit the big time with her song Redneck Woman. Here's Gretchen with, this is not the song I thought it was. Let's see if we can get politically incorrect here.
With Gaines Nimbus said, Maria can really rock a long travel day.
We do sometimes have our problems with with our audio. Here comes the remainder of the little Fabrini's ad. Politically incorrect.
Thank you.
And that's Gretchen Wilson and Merle Haggard, and that's Politically Uncorrect. Well, lots more news and views for our people, and hope you enjoy this. This is from the Council of European Canadians, and it's called The CBC Matrix by Tim Murray. Now, CBC is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and those of us who have groaned under its far leftist bias for decades, often called the Communist Broadcasting Corporation. News item: the CBC won't name a swimming pool sex assault suspect because he's a Muslim migrant. Talk about censorship. Why? Because they don't want us to know what a mess the invasion of our country, organized by the people, of course, they support and admire. Effective propaganda consists not so much of spinning the news, but choosing it, choosing what's newsworthy and what to exclude. The Lucan Press, or Gaps Press, as the sorely afflicted Germans have recently come to call it. At best, consumers are fed a half-truth, with the other half left out. Thus, the credulous dupes rely on state broadcasters like the CBC, the BBC, subsist on the meager diet of lies and omissions, pseudo-intellectual junk food that leaves their brains chronically malnourished. As such, they cannot comprehend reality because they've never been introduced to it, while lacking the ambition and diligence and skepticism required to search for alternative information sources. Be aware that misconception is like a comfortable shoe, and they're disinclined to get out of it. For instance, in Canada, we even have an organization of silly, really true believers called Friends of the CBC. If you live in the CBC matrix, you will not know what is happening in the real world. In the CBC matrix, there is no Muslim rape culture, no Islamic terrorism, just terrorism, no black-on-white crime, no inmates of color that were not unfairly convicted as a result of racial profiling or systemic racism in the legal system. And I might, as a sidebar to that, say, while they will report that Native Indians and Negroes are disproportionately represented in the prison population, there is usually a comment to the effect that racism is endemic in the system. In other words, they're not in prison because they murdered people or assaulted people or raped or committed armed robbery or sold drugs. No. It's because of racism. Because that helps in explaining the unexplainable. Well, it does to the idiots. In the CBC matrix, there's no epidemic of violence by Native men against Native women. No, there's this mystery, the disappearance and wildly excessive death through murder of Native women. We need a national inquiry. Well, we already have most of the facts. Facts are, most of the women who were murdered are murdered not by marauding whites or Chinese people. They're killed by fellow natives. Usually a lover, a boyfriend, a common-law, a husband, a father, or a near friend. Often with incidents propelled by drugs and alcohol. In the CBC matrix, there's no corrupt Native band councils which might misappropriate federal funds earmarked community property. There's no such thing as reverse discrimination. There's no anti-Native sexism. There's no anti-white racism. There's no anti-free speech fascism on campus. I don't like to use the term fascism, but tyranny. There's no immigration fraud. There are no bogus refugees. There are no unions, which means dues for Marxist causes. There are no environmental groups that claim charity status while taking politically partisan positions. There's no lawfare against critics of identity groups. There are no kangaroo courts where defendants are bankrupted by legal fees while the complainants' legal costs are picked up by the taxpayers. And these are human rights tribunals. If you live in the CBC matrix, you live in a make-believe world, a world where the juxtaposition of incompatible cultures in multi-ethnic states poses no risk of conflict, a world where ordinary people feel enriched by ethnic gang violence, a world where Germany can turn Syrians into Germans when they can't even turn Greeks into Germans, or Turks for that matter. It's a world where failed states can be fixed by sending migrants to Europe, North America, and Australia. And again, as a sidebar, I might say, this is folly. You've got failed states because of failed cultures. And so under the doctrine of multiculturalism, you want to export those cultures to other successful countries and expect a good result while you're encouraging them to keep their failed culture. The results are likely not going to be pretty. A world where cultural and ethnic diversity does not result in a decline of trust and civic participation. You live in a world where the imposition of ethnic harmony does not come at the cost of free speech. You live in a world where third world Muslim immigrants check their tribal mindset at the border. Yeah, right. A world where modern Muslims are vocal and the religion of peace is peaceful. Like, really? A world where third world immigration does not impose a massive fiscal burden on taxpayers in Canada. Massive third world immigration, that is, immigration, the immigration pattern of the last 30-some years, 85% from the third world. It's been calculated by Herb Gruden, writing in a report for the Fraser Institute back in 2011, that the cohort of immigrants that came from between 1987, I think, and 2005, so roughly a 30-year period, every year, not necessarily just once or one time only, every year imposed a burden on the Canadian taxpayers of $25 billion, calculated as the difference between the taxes these people pay, mostly in low-end or no-end jobs, and the benefits paid by taxpayers that they withdraw from the system. They withdraw $25 billion more than they put in. Clearly, third world immigration, a complete economic disaster for Canada. But if you live in the CBC matrix, you don't know that. The CBC matrix world, it's a world where the political class cares about public opinion. You're right. It's a world where mass immigration-driven population growth does not drive down wages and displace jobs, nor increase the gap between rich and poor, nor decrease per capita GDP. It's a world of fantasy. Well, this is Paul Froman. You're on the funny side of me. You're on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here's a... occasionally the bad guys do something good. And Immigration Canada has rejected a number of immigration applications from people in China. And thought you might want to find out some of the things, some of the reasons why some of these applications have been rejected. Because it points to a much larger problem. The Canadian government is preparing to reject the permanent presence of permanent residence applications of three Chinese who work for China's telecom giant Huawei, that's H-U-A-W-E-I, Huawei, citing concerns of spying, terrorism, or government subversion. A fourth individual who used to work for Huawei and his spouse is currently employed by the company, was also told the couple's application would be rejected. The case comes after Huawei, the world's third largest smartphone maker, which started operating in Canada in 2008, faced spying concerns in recent years. In a March 18th letter from a Canadian consulate in Hong Kong, an immigration officer told a Chinese applicant that officials were preparing to reject the person's application, which also included the applicant's spouse. Yeah, well, why is it all this so hidden? Now, I mean, it was presumably the male who was rejected, and it's possible it was a female. But it wasn't his spouse. You presumably mean his wife, or I should say the columnist means his wife, or Michelle Zillow writing for the Globe and Mail. In March, a letter from the Canadian consulate in Hong Kong, an immigration officer told the Chinese applicant that officials were preparing to reject the person's application, which included the applicant's spouse. Both individuals currently work for Huawei. The letter said there are reasonable grounds to believe the principal applicant is inadmissible under Section 34 sub 1 sub F of the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act, which deems individuals involved in espionage, terrorism, or government subversion is inadmissible. We'll presume this probably means espionage. In a separate letter dated March 21st, an immigration official rejected another Chinese applicant because that person was, there were reasonable grounds to believe the applicant's spouse was inadmissible under the same section of the act, meaning the principal applicant was also inadmissible by association. The principal applicant used to work for Huawei while the spouse still works for the company. I just love the vague world of political correctness. We don't get names. A source provided the names of the four individuals to the Globe and Mail under strict confidentiality. It goes on about both couples are represented by the same immigration lawyer in Hong Kong. Huawei is an employee-owned company based in China and currently operates in 170 countries. It's quite the big multinational, including the United States, where it has run into some problems in recent years. In 2012, U.S. House Intelligence Committee report said that Huawei posed a risk of further economic and foreign espionage by a foreign state. That's, of course, Red China. Already known to be a major perpetrator of cyber espionage. That's kind of important. We've been warned in Canada at least as far back as the Sidewinder report of 1997, very close to 20 years old. We warned again and again and again about the dangers of Communist China's espionage, spying. Not just political and governmental espionage, but spying on commercial espionage. The Red Chinese are notorious for stealing economic secrets. Huawei currently operates across the United States, it's barred from being on contracts with tier one carriers such as Verizon and AT&T. Australia also blocked Huawei in 2012 from being on its national broadband network over cybersecurity concerns. Huawei continues to operate in Australia. Of course, it denies all spying. Public Safety Minister in Canada, Ralph Goodale, his office refused to comment on Huawei's presence in Canada, saying it does not comment on national security operational matters. Always keep us in the dark. In 2010, the company received a $6.5 million grant from the Ontario government in exchange for investing $67 million and supposedly creating 164 new jobs over 5 years. That seems like an awful lot of money to create 164 new jobs over a five-year period. Since then, Huawei has invested hundreds of millions of dollars in Ontario in research and development. Ontario Immigration Minister Michael Chan's office has referred questions about the immigration cases to the federal government. Both Mr. Chan and Federal Immigration Minister John McCallum represent Markham, which is a heavily Chinese area. And Chan has been, on a number of occasions, criticized as being overly pro-communist Chinese. Now, in fairness, these are accusations, but nonetheless, communist Chinese espionage is notorious, and looks as though, perhaps, doesn't often happen, but at least in this case, the powers-to-be are standing on guard for us, at least keeping these people out of the country. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the plain side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. This program is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. Of course, I'm with you every night at midnight, 6 nights a week, and that's midnight Eastern Time, and the show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. Those are, of course, also Eastern Standard Time. I sign lots of money, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Fervor, played by the 48th Islanders.